Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald Review, dated October 11th, 2016. We'll begin today with an article on the front page headlined Fire Training Tool Nears. This was written by Allison Petty. After a long wait and several false starts, the Decatur Fire Department is getting a new training facility. It's nothing fancy. 7 large shipping containers welded and stacked together on a concrete foundation at Fire Station 2 on East William Street. But department leaders say the new facility will provide flexibility to practice a variety of scenarios. It will also allow Decatur to train its recruit classes in the city instead of using Mount Zion's facility as the department did in 2012. The only time you fight a fire should not be at the fire, Fire Chief Jeff Abbott said. Quoting again, "We've got to practice. Guys get rusty over time if they haven't done it, something over and over. The more replication we can put them through, the better they are on the scene of an actual fire." The department's former training tower was deemed unsafe to use by Chastain and Associates in 2006. Initial plans for a new facility would have cost $486,000, but the money was diverted when the city hit hard financial times in 2008. New design plans were approved in 2012, using shipping containers in a manner similar to Mount Zion's facility. Abbott said, "Every year, the city made more progress without actually completing the tower. In 2013, the foundation was poured and containers delivered. In 2014, containers were stacked and welded together. In 2015, the city removed asbestos from the old tower and demolished it. After all that, Abbott and Deputy Chief Rich Pruitt said they are looking forward to completing the project, possibly by the end of October. King Lahr, the winning bidder, will add stairs and doors at a cost of roughly $115,000. The building is configured so that the floor plan can be changed, which is crucial for firefighters who never know what they're walking into for each call. Outside stairs will allow the firefighters to access the second floor and descend inside, imitating the experience of a basement fire. Fires will be set in the southeast corner of the building, likely in an overturned dumpster that would allow smoke and heat to spread. The department could also use 55-gallon burn barrels in different locations in the building. Quote, "You definitely don't want it to be that nice," Abbott said of the building. "You just want it to be safe and practical." The building will also feature a top railing for roof drills and holes in the ceiling to allow practice of specialty skills such as trench rescues. Quote, "We can use different techniques," Abbott said. "New equipment comes along, like different types of thermal imaging cameras. This gives us the ability to try out that equipment to see if it works the way we want it to work and get our guys familiar with it." Abbott and Pruitt said they anticipate using the new tower more than 30 times a year, with 3 shifts practicing each type of exercise. The department is set up to do some training exercises in Station 1. It has also relied heavily on the generosity of property owners who sometimes donated structures for training before they were scheduled for demolition. The training tower represents a definite expansion of options. When that kind of stuff is not available, this is quote, we've been really handcuffed on what we could do, Pruitt said. With this, we'll be able to have multiple trainings here year round. A photograph shows a very impressive structure, and it shows carpenter Randy Mundell finishing his work for the day on the new Decatur Fire Department training tower under construction at Fire Station 2 on East William Street. What I wasn't prepared to see was the height of this structure. It's as though at least three freight cars are piled together, one on top of the other. It's really quite impressive. Also on page one, we find this unusual headline. Rumors of clown threats net worry locally, nationally. And this was written by Tony Reed with a Dateline of Decatur. Coulrophobia, a morbid fear of clowns, is spreading across the nation like a flu outbreak, and its symptoms are infecting people in central Illinois. Decatur police have received several calls from Facebook users worried about threatening messages that pop up, accompanied by pictures of clowns. These have turned out to be hoaxes, but they are part of a coast-to-coast pattern of scary clown sightings and reports of clowns frightening people. Most proving false, but some real, that are intensifying as Halloween approaches. Quote, social media causes stuff like this to just blow up and get way out of proportion, said Police Sergeant Chris Copeland. I even heard that somewhere down in the south part of the country, this might be another rumor floating around Facebook. Someone actually got shot while wearing a clown suit. Copeland said people have a legal right to dress as whomever or whatever they want for Halloween, but he urges caution on where you wear a clown suit and how you behave, and says this might be a very good year to make another costume choice. And he also has a word of warning for coulrophobia sufferers. Don't overreact. Copeland has seen aggressive messages on Facebook targeting clowns and threatening to wipe the smile off their faces with violence. Quote, I would also like to caution anyone thinking that just because someone is wearing a clown suit, that gives reasonable cause to shoot them or kill them, added Copeland. That is not the case. Nationwide news reports on the scary clown phenomena have quoted instances of schools being locked down on reports of clowns wandering the campus. Rolling Stone magazine featured an interview with author Lauren Coleman, a Decatur native, who wrote about something he called phantom clown theory in his 1981 book, Mysterious America. Coleman is quoted as saying stories about clowns trying to lure children have persisted for years and can warp into a mass hysteria. Professional clowns, meanwhile, are feeling the pain, both in their wallets as bookings get canceled and in fear for their own safety. One group met in Tucson, Arizona, recently to stage a costume protest march called Clown Lives Matter. A flyer for the event said, quote, the march is a peaceful way to show clowns are not psycho killers. Come out, bring the family, meet a clown, and get a hug. Decatur Police Chief Jim Getz, watching the clown scare roll across the internet, said he's not seen anything like this before. Quote, As good as the social media can be for some things, it can be just as detrimental in other ways, he said. We turn now to page 3 for local news. The largest article at the very top of the page has this headline, Township Staff OK Contract. This was written by Ryan Voiles. Contract peace between the Decatur Township and its union employees will continue for the foreseeable future. The township's Board of Trustees last week unanimously approved a contract with 5 workers represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. The contract, which expires in 2020, is retroactive to when the past contract expired on April 30th. Under the agreement, the 5 employees who work primarily in the General Assistance Department would receive at least a 3% raise each May 1st until 2019, dating back to this May. The biggest change since the last contract was approved in 2013 is the shift in how general assistance is implemented. Starting this year, those who seek general assistance, which aids those who do not qualify for other forms of public assistance, must now also meet eligibility requirements and other guidelines. So far, the employees of the office have appreciated the changes, said Renee Nessler, a representative from AFSCME, which aided in negotiations. Quote, "The employees are happy. They're enjoying the new program," she said. "They're pleased with the direction of general assistance." The contract also modifies some language, such as identifying the state of Illinois as part of the agreement. Since state funds have been cut, officials determined the new contract would only be between the union and township. Other updates include changes to the grievance process and allowing the use of vacation days to cover sick time pending administrative approval. If the township intends to lay off an employee, officials must notify the union and the employee at least 30 days before the determination date. This is the second straight contract between the two sides that has been negotiated in relative peace. A change of pace from the relationship between the two sides more than 4 years ago, which saw employees receive pay cuts and the union file 2 unfair labor practice claims against the township. Supervisor Lisa Stanley said it was important for the two sides to come to terms and continue with the progress made in the General Assistance Department. I'm glad we can provide or we can continue to move forward and keep providing help for those in need, she said. We turn to the next article, headline, World Comes to Milliken. And this was written by Teresa Churchill. A.U. Pummer of Vienna, Austria, had a reason for setting up her information table next to that of fellow college junior Kate Christie of Caloundra, Australia. Quote, "I don't want people to think I made a spelling mistake," Pummer said. "I'm from Europe. I speak German, and I don't have kangaroos." Such was the more basic level of education Monday evening during Milliken University's International Month Festival in Richards Treat University Center. But some of it was far more advanced. One example was the way Lauren Musserlarian, a junior biology major from Racine, Wisconsin, took the opportunity to pump Christie for information to help prepare for studying abroad next semester in Australia. Quote, She'll go through autumn all over again while she's there, Christy said. For another Millikan graduate, Justin Ostergaard described how his recent experiences teaching English in South Korea and backpacking through Southeast Asia elevated his life to a new level. Quote, "There was a specific moment in my life where everything seemed to be going perfectly," the theater major said. "I was in 42nd Street playing opposite Karen Ziemba. I was running a business. I was dating a super hot guy. But I wasn't happy or fulfilled for whatever reason." That's the end of the quote. Molly Berry, Millikan's Director of Inclusion and Student Engagement, said the purpose of the event is to expose students to a global environment. More than a dozen countries were represented, including Afghanistan, China, El Salvador, France, Lithuania, Taiwan, and Vietnam. For some, including displays for the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Tajikistan, Japan, and India, students wore clothing from their home countries. Juniors Yuina Hiroaka and Chiho Iwasaki of Japan explain that the yukatas they were wearing cost only about $400 a piece, a mere fraction of the price for a traditional furisode, the most formal of kimonos a young woman wears for her coming-of-age day when she turns 20. Parag Sachdeva, a freshman entrepreneurship major from New Delhi, said that the Nehru jacket he wore was only for special occasions. He, "Did you know that India is the world's second largest English-speaking country?" he asked visitors. Ostergaard was joined by two Millikan seniors to answer questions at the end of the evening. They were Jocelyn Hernandez, a marketing major from Des Plaines, who spent the spring semester studying in Spain, and Haley Hogenkamp, a business management major from St. Henry, Ohio, who studied last fall in Geneva, Switzerland. Quote, "For me, the biggest challenge, the language barrier, because I didn't speak French," Hogenkamp said. "There I was, and I couldn't even order food. There was no way for me to prepare for it, other than to think about what I could do to not get frustrated." Also on page 3, we have this article, "Cancer Fight Supporters Show True Colors." This was written by Dave Fope, and the deadline is Mattoon. Joe Borigian wore spots of various colors of paint to go with his blue tutu. He took part in the Paint the Town 5K running event Saturday morning, traveling through some of the streets of Mattoon to help bring awareness to the many types of cancer and efforts to find a cure. The Charleston resident said he ran in honor of Randy McCullum of Grandview, his stepdaughter's grandfather, who has prostate cancer. Quote, "It's why I'm wearing blue," he said. Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center sponsored the event, which started last year as Paint the Town Pink for breast cancer awareness. Along the route Saturday, runners were doused with powdered paint in colors that represent other types of cancer as well, and that was something Borigian said he appreciated. Quote, "They're equal as far as I'm concerned," he said. After last year's run, participants urged the change to, quote, "celebrate the fight against all cancers," event director Laura Boland said. Runners were sprayed with purple, which represents cancer in general, and pink, while running, and then a variety of colors at the end. Dylan St. John of Mattoon was one of a group of about a dozen runners who had pictures of Dick St. John, his grandfather, on the shirts they wore. Quote, "He was a fighter," St. John said of his relative, who died recently from colon cancer. "We're supporting and honoring him." Boland said about 600 runners participated, and most of them had personal ties to the disease. Quote, "They're usually someone whose lives have been touched by cancer," she said. She said the purpose of the event was mostly to raise awareness, but proceeds from the $20 per runner registration fee went toward construction of Sarah Bush's new cancer center, which is nearly completed. Some area businesses paid the entry fee so their employees could participate, she added. The photograph with this article shows a male runner who is wearing a t-shirt and a pink tutu. He has his hands up in the air and a smile on his face. He is being doused with paint at the end of the Paint the Town run. And he looks like he's enjoying himself, actually. In the briefs column on page 3, there's an article concerning military addresses. Operation Enduring Support, a military, family, faith-based support group, seeks APO and FPO addresses and donations for a Christmas mailing of care packages to troops deployed overseas. Addresses may be submitted by Thursday, November 17th to Ann Irwin, and her telephone number is 217-428-5936. They can also be mailed to OES in care of Grace United Methodist Church, 901 North Main Street, Decatur. Suggested donations include cash for postage, letters from children, dark lightweight socks, jersey gloves, hanging car deodorizers, cotton swabs, wet wipes, men's magazines, playing cards, hand and foot warmers, and personal care products. Also welcome are protein, energy and granola bars, cheese and cracker packs, beef Slim Jims and cheese sticks, canned meat and sandwich spread, individual powered drink, hot chocolate packages, and hard candy. This will be the 15th annual Christmas mailing. Here's a notice entitled Boo at the Zoo. Scoville Zoo's Boo at the Zoo will be 3 to 8 p.m. Saturdays and Sundays and 5:50 to 8 p.m. weeknights from October 15th to the 30th. Animal encounters and treat stations will be offered. Admission is $4.75 if collecting treats, $3.75 if not. Younger than 2 and not collecting treats are free. Rides on the Endangered Species Carousel and Fright Night Express train will have separate charges. The zoo will not be open Halloween night, October 31st. For more information, call 422-5911. Also on page 3, this announcement of an accident in Missouri. Motorcyclist dies. A Decatur man and former Harristown firefighter was killed Sunday evening when he lost control of his motorcycle while riding on Missouri 94. Missouri State Police said Zachary T. Rode, 23, was pronounced dead at the scene of the crash at 6:35 p.m. by Warren County Coroner Glenn Craig. Rode, who had lived in New Haven, Missouri, had been westbound on the highway when troopers say he failed to negotiate a left-hand curve before driving off the road to the right and was ejected as his motorcycle struck a ditch and a dirt embankment. We turn now to page 5 for this article by Mary Hunt. For every problem, WD-40 comes to the rescue. It's not new. The blue and yellow can is about as familiar as anything I remember from my childhood. Because it was banished to a shelf in the garage, I assumed WD-40 was for cars. Boy, was I wrong. WD-40 is amazing and cheap. A 12-ounce can costs less than $5 when purchased online or at Home Depot or Walmart. Here's the WD-40 rule. Use it, then remove it. Always. WD-40 must be rinsed away. A buildup of WD-40 can create its own sticky mess over time. WD-40 is a petroleum-based product, so is Vaseline. While the aerosol propellant is flammable, the product itself is, according to the manufacturer, harmless to humans. WD-40 gets things unstuck and much more. I know. I go through this stuff like water. Have you ever opened the dryer to find that a red crayon has ruined the entire load? The folks at Crayola offer this remedy for freshly heat-set crayon stains. If something's melted, 1. Place the stained surface down on a pad of paper towels. Spray it with WD-40. Let it sit for a few minutes. Turn the fabric over and spray the other side. Apply liquid dishwashing detergent and work into the stained area, replacing the paper towels as the stain is absorbed. Then wash in hot water with laundry detergent and Clorox 2 or Biz for about 12 minutes. Use the heavy soil setting if there is no minute timer on your machine and rinse in warm water. Be sure to clean the drum of your dryer to remove any remaining wax residue. Spray a soft cloth with WD-40 and wipe the drum well. Run a load of dry rags through a full dry cycle. WD-40 removes stickers and adhesives from glass, plastic countertops and containers. It removes chewing gum, tar, and silly putty from most surfaces. Spray, wait, and wipe. Use WD-40 to clean the tracks in sliding windows or drawers to make them glide again. Spray on, then wipe off. Give a snow shovel a spray to combat sticky snow. Make hangers glide over a clothes rod by spraying WD-40 onto a cloth and applying it to the rod. And if something scratches, WD-40 cleans, restores, and camouflages scratches on ceramic and marble floors. It hides small scratches on woodwork and gives wood that just waxed sheen without making it slippery. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the October 11th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.